Find your new home in Marysville at Cook's Point or Kenmore Place. Two amazing, ardent communities now offering free rent for 2 months. Choose from spacious apartments with luxury touches like walk-in closets, modern kitchens, and private patios or balconies. Plus, you'll love the community perks like a 24-hour fitness center, resort-style swimming pool, and beautifully landscaped grounds. Move in today and live rent-free for 2 months. To schedule a tour or get more info on rent specials, call or visit ardentcommunities.com.
Hello, I'm Alice Arnold. Welcome to the Magic Musicals and Theatre Podcast. My guest this week is the actor, director and producer, Simon Callow. Simon Callow, who's sitting opposite me in the studio, legend, the legend of the theatre that is Simon Callow. It's very exciting for me to meet you.
Ah, it is. Well, it's lovely to be met.
I'm very excited. Now, we're sort of Christmassy now.
Yes.
We're going to pretend it is actually Christmas.
Yes.
Although it's not actually Christmas.
No.
Quite yet. But you are doing your one-man show of A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
At the Arts Theatre, which opens on December the 8th, which is quite close to Christmas.
It is very close
when we get there.
Yes.
But it's not the first time you've done this, is it?
No, this is the fourth time I've done this. And a very wonderful it is to do it. It's just unique, isn't it? A Christmas Carol. It's. I don't think there's another book in the English language like it. It seems to touch everybody, which is what happened when it was first written and sold on Christmas Eve for the first time in 1843, and immediately became a huge success. Transformed Dickens's reputation. He was loved. He was a read writer. You know, people loved him. But some with this book, people thought he really spoke for England, you know, and drew attention to shocking injustices in society, while at the same time, with his peculiar kind of magic, making it joyful and funny and wildly imaginative.
You are basically the expert on Dickens, so as we've just been able to tell, I think. when did your sort of fascination with Dickens begin?
When I was a butter boy and I had chicken pox, and my dear old grandma came to look after me, and chicken pox is just the most unbearable thing. It's a medieval affliction because you long to scratch it. You scratch yourself and then it's 10 times worse and so on. And my grandmother very brilliantly placed in my hands a copy of the Pickwick Papers, and I just stopped scratching from then on. I never scratched again. And it's just such a... That book, which was, of course, his first novel, and the novel that made him a world superstar overnight, more or less, the first real international celebrity, is just so crammed full of characters and mad situations and a joyous celebration of everything that is strange and odd and irregular in life. And I just adored him from that second on, and then I just read as much as I could. I had actually before that seen A Christmas Carol on stage when I was about 8, and it scared the hell out of me. I just didn't like it at all. I thought it was really frightening. And it is a ghost story as well as everything else. It has its moments, its scary moments. But it was the Pickwick Papers really that did it for me.
See, I always think with Dickens, you think of it, oh, school, and oh, we've got to read Dickens, and it's a... And I did a production of David Copperfield on the radio once, and I thought, well, I better read it. It's such a page-turner, you can't put it down.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing I think people forget about Dickens, that especially if you read them as an adult.
Yeah.
They're not children's books. They are brilliant page-turners.
Yes, exactly right, exactly right. I thought the best thing of all to do is to read them out loud to yourself, because that's how he expected people to really come to know them, because... As everybody knows, they came out in either monthly or weekly instalments. And then I suppose the head of the family would have bought the instalment, you know, and they were really hotly anticipated, the way people wait to see the next episode of The Crown or whatever it is. Mm. And then presumably the father of the family would just sit down and read it to the family. And Dickens is always present in his own writing. You always feel the writer there. And in works like Christmas Carol, he actually even says things like, he says when the spirit of Christmas past appears, first appears, he says to the reader, he was as near to Scrooge as you are to me. Those exact words, you know. That's a very special quality, I don't think. That's why we really wanted to do it as a one-person play, because you get his voice. He is the narrator. He tells the story.
You see, now you're the male expert, I would say, in the world on Dickens.
But
and the female, probably
is.
Miriam Margolyes.
It certainly
so,
is.
Now, have you ever thought that the two of you should get together?
I think it might be too much of a good thing, I think.
Do you
we
think?
Have pondered this between us, but yes.
Yes. All right, so no. Probably wise.
I think it's possible.
Yes. On December the 11th, there's a cinematic version of this coming out.
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Very thrilled about that, because we even while we were rehearsing it for the first time in 2012, I think it was, 2011, actually, we started to think what a wonderful movie it would make, but not, we didn't never wanted to do a film version of the stage show. We wanted to do, to reimagine it completely especially in our minds, as a story set in some kind of abandoned house. And in fact, we found an abandoned munitions depot in the Woolwich Arsenal to shoot it in. Bitterly cold it was in February, and with renter rats all over the place and smashed windows and so on.
Oh, gosh.
And dirt and filth. And in that exactly fitting environment, I told the story again, but in a totally different way. And we didn't really even plan it very, very carefully. I just wandered around the house, making whichever room I was in into the place we were talking about. So it became, as the stage show had been, but in a totally different way, it became about the audience using their imagination and creating the space. I'd said, this is where we are. We're in the Fezziwigs ball, and they had to imagine that for themselves. And I'm sort of tootled around a bit in the space, but really it was getting them to see it with their own eyes, you know, from their own inner fantasies.
Okay, so now that's released 444 cinemas. I
know. How about that?
I know. Coming out on December the 11th.
Yeah.
Now, you've had a long and varied and brilliant career, but I had to see. I was looking you up. Not that I had to really look you up very much, but I didn't know this about you, that your first job was as the front end of a horse in Wojcech. Now,
correct.
I didn't know there was a horse in Wojcech.
There is.
Is there?
There's a scene in the circus when Wojcech and his friend Andres go to the circus. Or not to the circus, to a fairground, really. Mm. And there's a counting horse.
Right.
And I was the front end of that.
We must have skipped that. Over that when I did it. We didn't do that. But you are also a director and a writer. And, of course, anybody who was anybody wanting to be in the theatre read your book on being an actor when we were all drama students. Everybody read that. So when did you branch out into writing?
That was my first book. The book that you've just talked about, Being an Actor, was my very first book. But I always wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a writer long before I wanted to be an actor.
Oh,
in fact,
you?
I didn't particularly want to be an actor. If I think back on it, the things I did want to do, which were being a barrister or being a diplomat, were basically acting by another means. I fell in love with the theatre, but it never crossed my mind, really, that I would be an actor, because, oddly enough, we had no school drama in my school at all. And it was by going to the theatre, I knew everything about the theatre. I read books about it, I read plays incessantly, from day in to day out. I read all of Shakespeare's plays, all of Shaw's plays, all of Ibsen, all of Strindberg. I just ate them up. I found I could read them very easily. I had the sort of imagination where I could see what was being written about on the page. The theatre that I was most in love with was the Old Vic, but when Laurence Olivier was running it, when the National Theatre started, which it started at the Old Vic in 62. So I went there with my school, and then I went there on my own. I was so intoxicated by the place and by the feeling that everybody had, the good spirit, the feeling that everybody was involved in something they really wanted to do. I thought, well, how wonderful, I must tell Laurence Olivier of this fact. And so I sat down and I wrote, because you see I had a typewriter of my own, on three foolscap closely typed pages explaining to Laurence Olivier what a wonderful theatre he was running. And he wrote back by return of post and said, well, if you like it so much, why don't you come and work here? There's a job in the box office. And so that's how I became involved in the theatre at all. And then I suddenly met actors for the first time, and I thought, well, maybe I could be an actor. Who knows? I met these kids called Mike Gambon and Derek Jacobi and Jane Lapater. They were just, you know, pretty well at the start of their careers. And they seemed very regular kind of guys. I didn't know what actors would be like. I thought they'd be strange, exotic, you know, smoking cigarettes out of long cigarette holders and wearing dressing gowns, but not at all. They were just blokes, really.
Fully dressed.
Doing this job, almost entirely fully dressed. And so from that, I began to think, well, maybe I... But if I am to be an actor, how am I going to find out? So I thought, well, maybe I could do amateur theatre. And I, for some reason, thought that wouldn't be a good idea for me. Then I thought, well, I could go to drama school. But by now I was 19, and I thought I was far too old for that. So then I thought, I know what I could do. And I've read about these other actors. There's an actor called Ian McKellen, and there's one called Alan Howard, and they went to university and then became actors. So I thought, I'll do that. I'll go to university. I did, and I went to university and discovered a great and important truth, which was that I was crap. And so I decided that I'd better go and find out how to act then. And then I went to a drama school. And then the rest...
So you did the traditional route
history. Yes.
In the end. Mm. But and talking about... it's so interesting you talking about reading plays and being able to imagine them. Because I think a lot of people, that's really difficult, actually.
Yes.
I think reading it off the page is hard. And presumably that's what makes you such a good director, because you can see it straight off the page.
Yes, that maybe have something to do with it.
I don't think everyone can do that.
Yes, that's true. Well, not all actors can do it,
no,
either.
That's no. What I mean.
It's just a useful thing, you know. But I mean... eventually actors find out by reading it to each other and by standing up and so on. But it's not a bad thing to be able... It's sort of a virtual reality kind of thing. You have to just imagine it. And I've always been good at that. Of course, sometimes you imagine it wrongly. That's the danger. Exactly.
Differently. Now, you've done quite a lot of one-man shows.
I've done lots.
Do you miss acting with other people? Or is it just easier not to have to bother with them?
Other people are greatly overrated. When I said to Maggie Smith the other day, I said, she said, what are you doing, darling? And I said, I'm doing another one-man show, Maggie. She said, oh, very sensible. She said, it's none of that kicking the other actors out of the way. I love acting with other people. I love it. I do. And I'm going to do it quite soon in the spring. In January, I'm going to be... rehearsing, and in February acting in a play by Noel Coward.
Oh, which one?
Called Song at Twilight. It's the last play he ever wrote, and we're doing it at Bath and on tour.
So you will be interacting. You will have to deal with other people.
I know.
Simon.
I know.
You've also written biographies. Mm. Quite Oscar Wilde, Charles Laughton, Orson Welles. Have you got a plan for your next subject?
No. I'm through with biography now.
Oh, okay.
I've done, because the Orson Welles one I've been writing since 1989, and there are three volumes out so far, and now I'm going to write the last. So I think as it's time, really, for me to start living a life so interesting that other people will want to write about me.
Perfect. And why not? Now, as it's a Christmas show that you're doing, and really, I suppose the piece that probably gave what we think of as Christmas to the English population, really. I mean, I think that Dickens' Christmas is what we now all try to recreate. I mean, I don't think nothing was like that before. What's your Christmas like? Is it a Dickens Christmas?
We do that very properly. Yes, my husband Seb and I are great fans of Christmas. I'm a big decorator of the house, and he's an extraordinarily good cook. And we like to have a blazing fire on the hearth. And it is true. For years and years and years, I didn't do it at all. In fact, for years and years, I used to get out of the country and preferably go somewhere where it wouldn't be celebrated. But it became very hard to find such a place. I went one year to Tunisia in a town called Hammamet, which is in the absolute heart of the Muslim world. And it decided to snow inexplicably, whereupon they started producing roast chicken and Brussels sprouts. I don't know how they
could. And fairy lights.
While German tourists sang O Tannenbaum.
But now you enter fully. You're not a Scrooge. You enter firmly into the spirit of Christmas. What music will be playing on your CD player
at Christmas time? Well, I suppose some carols, but not all that many carols. I'm a big classical music buff, and probably Bach's Christmas Oratorio will feature quite heavily because it's just so joyous and bursting with trumpets and lusty young voices. It's fantastic.
It does sound very romantic, Christmas at your house. Can I come?
Please.
Be at Christmas at your house.
Of course, the invitation's in the post.
Yeah, and I don't do the cooking or any of that, so I like other people to do it. It's perfect. The Christmas shopping thing, that's the other thing, because you will be busy at the Arts Theatre. So will you?
I'm exempted from Christmas shopping, therefore.
Are you not going to have to do it between the matinees and the evening shows?
No,
you are near lots of shops.
Yes, I mean. It's true.
You are.
Oh, it's horrible. That's the aspect of Christmas that I like least, because people feel under this huge pressure to give presents, and they start buying people ridiculous things that they don't really want because they just think, oh, God, I've just got to, there's got to be something
gotta
there.
Got to get them something.
In yeah. Wrapped up.
Yeah.
There will be Seb and I certainly give each other gifts, but we increasingly tend to give gifts which actually are for both of us rather than just for one of us. So
quite right. Something new for the kitchen.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Perfect. Well, Simon Callow, you start your run at the Arts Theatre on December the 8th. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
And good luck with acting with other people in the spring. And thank you so much for coming in, making us feel Christmassy. That was the Musicals and Theatre podcast. And if you enjoyed that, then why not subscribe? It's absolutely free to our channel on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear me every weekend morning from 6 till 10 on Mellow Magic.